to Football Friday with the Boss.
I call shots like a boss.
In the gloss.
Check out my lip gloss. I only rock clear.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Blue Emu and Rocket Mortgage.
From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gow
and Carla Dawson.
I got that sunshine in my pocket.
Good morning. It is great to be with you, Carla Dawson, the gloss. How are you?
It is still a Football Friday. I'm going to stick with that. Look what the NFL just controls the narrative.
Well, it does, and we've got
done, and we are still going. It's Football Friday. I love it.
Well, we got a great chance to watch Tom Brady dance on a boat, and that was after a few drinks, and that guy was having a good day.
Heave a trophy, boat to boat. I mean, that was gutsy. But when you're Tom Brady, you're not worried about it.
Well, you raised an interesting topic offline. Was does the world like him more because he can be that every guy?
Right.
I mean, he's almost too good to be true. His diet's too untouchable. No one can live up to that standard. But yesterday, he was just one of the pack out on the boat having a couple of drinks.
Ago. Yeah, when he staggered off the boat.
That yes.
Was, I thought, I bet there's some avocado in his tequila, but he has had some.
Yeah.
I loved seeing that. It made me like him more. It's like, wow, you're relatable and kind of normal for a second. It was funny. He had to be helped off that boat.
Just for a half second. But yes, he looked like just any other fraternity guy having a good time
like
out
Gronk.
On the party boat. He looked like Gronk. And Gronk is the poster child of somebody who has a good time celebrating a big win, which they had in an amazing game, a stunning game to me. And we will unpack that next segment. We also have today Trevor Lawrence out there with his pro day at Clemson.
Yeah, that which is going to be fascinating. This is unusual, but he's going to, right after this pro day, have surgery on his non-throwing shoulder. And the reason he's pushing this up early and doing this is so that he can be ready for NFL training camps in July, which is great. So I'm excited to see it. And not that we need to see anything on Trevor Lawrence. Good gosh.
Well,
do you have any doubt he's not going number one?
And so it's funny because someone should keep a stat on this, and I'm sure somebody is somewhere. But since I love to read every mock draft that comes out, I do every year.
Yes.
This is perhaps the only time I can remember that there's been one guy at the top of every mock draft of every one that came out from every media source. It's Trevor Lawrence, number one overall.
But remember, Baker Mayfield was not until like 2 days before the draft, and all of a sudden, he ended up going number one. So you never know. That's why Football Fridays keep happening.
All right, when we come back, we're going to look at the quarterback carousel in the NFL this offseason. You're listening to The Boss and the Gloss on Sports Map Radio.
Don't take chances with COVID-19.
It's a Football Friday with the Boss.
In the Gloss.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Blue Emu and Rocket Mortgage.
From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gow
and Carla Dawson.
Welcome back. I am sitting next to Carla Dawson, the Gloss. And it is interesting that the Super Bowl was just last Sunday. It feels so much more than just 5 days ago because already there are so many NFL headlines taking place this offseason, off to a fast and furious start. But before we get to the fate of Carson Wentz and other people, your reactions on the Super Bowl?
Surprising.
It really was surprising to me. What surprised me
no touchdowns by
more
Kansas
than
City.
Anything was yeah. the way the Bucs defense was able to shut down the Chiefs offense. And I guess my headline on the overall game is that this was old-fashioned football win. It was
where defense wins championships.
Well, the Buccaneers had a defense that was better, and they actually controlled the line of scrimmage on the offensive line, too. Brady was very, very well protected. And so when you think about the old school logic that if you win the trenches, you win the game, they really did. The Buccaneers were the more physical team, and you could feel that on both sides of the ball.
Well, the only thing that wasn't old school was Patrick Mahomes' rushing yards behind the line of scrimmage,
yeah.
which was almost 500, and which, to your point, is all about the pressure coming from the defense. Almost 500 yards rush, and we saw it. You and I watched the game together, and I mean, it was sideline to sideline of him just trying to escape, going backwards, going forwards, and so many forward, like almost looked like he got shoved in the back type passes just that seriously were catchable. And those receivers just, you know, Hill and Kelsey were not on their game at all. It was a crazy thing to watch.
Well, when you mention his running around and you talk about it old school, so I'm going to make a reference that almost no one will get, but I can remember Fran Tarkenton looking like that in a Super Bowl against the...
Don't give your age.
I know it was long ago, but Fran was running around scrambling all day long with a lot of pressure in his face. That was a long time ago. This week, Patrick Mahomes under siege. I guess the one thing that surprised me on the Chiefs side of the ball is that they really didn't make an adjustment in the sense that the defense was set up to take away the long and deep passes. And yet it was as if the Chiefs still believed somehow we're going to be able to go deep. We're going to be able to go deep to Watkins. We're going to be able to go deep to Hill. And we're going to make them play the way we want to play. But the adjustment that needed to be made was that they make a lot of quick tosses, passes to the back out in the flat. They really needed to dink and dunk down the field, and yet it looked like they were trying to go downfield where the defense was already in place.
Well, you know, not to throw water on everything, I agree with you. I was surprised at the lack of adjustments, especially at the half. I mean, Andy Reid is a brilliant coach. Eric Bieniemy is a brilliant OC. I have to believe, and this isn't talked about much, and I can understand why, but Andy Reid's son, Brett Reid, formerly of the Kansas City Chiefs, he's now on administrative leave, was involved in a horrific car accident at his fault. You know, he was, under the influence of some things. I'm not exactly sure what. I think pain meds, that kind of thing. Anyway, there's a 5-year-old girl in critical condition still in the hospital. And so I've got to believe that I don't think Andy Reid and really this whole team that loves Andy Reid so much had the capacity to be able to be sharp and be all in at the Super Bowl. And honestly, it just looked like it from the whole sideline to me, you know, the whole team, you know, their body language, their facial expressions, including Mahomes, looked defeated from the first quarter on. They just looked like they didn't have it in them. And I've got to believe that that enormity played a big pall over this team and their ability to be what they're used to being.
And injuries on the front, offensive line, all came together.
Of course.
For a great, great day for the Buccaneers. Well, congrats to the Buccaneers. Congrats to Tom Brady. And, of course, there's nothing really we can say to add to the legend that he is. One outcome, though, this year that is intriguing is Tom Brady, of course, came to a team without a lot of training camp because of COVID. And in his,
he snuck into training camp.
Well, he did his
Everyone says that, but I'm like, you know what? There was a high school in Florida that was super excited that he and some Bucks were there playing. So.
Can you imagine at your kid's high school that Tom Brady
got
and
Godwin
some receivers?
And Evans out there catching passes from Brady.
What a great optic that is. But he was able to come in year one, and they put together a team and won the Super Bowl. And it almost gives birth to this notion that perhaps a quarterback can come in and in year one make that kind of a mark. And I just want to highlight why I think it's so different is that, well, for instance, with the Cowboys, there's logic. When Mike McCarthy came, there was logic that said, well, we've got to keep Kellen Moore so that Dak doesn't have to adjust to a new offense. We want to keep continuity on the offense. And that's just with having the same coach with a quarterback at the same team. Even more so is a quarterback going to another team. And Brady went in year one, and they were able to pull it off. And I think it gives birth to this idea, and we look at this possible quarterback carousel that's going to take place this offseason. It gives birth to the idea that, yes, it's okay to go out and get somebody and believe that you can win in year one with that guy. And it gives credence to that, well, it looks like there are more teams willing to trade or go find another quarterback. As we've talked about before, there may be as many as 15 to 18 teams that have a new starting quarterback this offseason. Indianapolis Colts poster child, rumored to be interested in picking up Carson Wentz.
Oy, oy, oy.
Now, I don't like Carson Wentz for anybody, but they believe, Frank Reich seems to believe, that
which
he can fix Wentz.
His OC in Philly.
If anybody can do it, he is the guy.
Sure.
And, of course, the other rumor is that it would be the Bears, where DeFilippo is there, and he is a guy who also worked with Wentz. So they both think we can bring him back to what he was. But he was never that good. I mean, it's amazing to me that the Eagles can say, we want a Matt Stafford-type package for Carson Wentz. I'm sorry.
Oh, that's not happening.
How does that That's just smoke and mirrors. There's no way that's going to happen.
No. And, you know, the difference is what you're talking about with Brady, which is a great example, and obviously he's the GOAT, you know, as far as quarterbacks go for sure. Here's what else Brady brings to the table, though. It's not just an experienced winning quarterback who knows how to win. It's a guy who recruited Gronk. Gronk wasn't coming out of retirement. We saw him on a stage talking to an audience, crying about the pain and the suffering that he's gone through and so happy to be in retirement. He comes out because Tom says, come play with me. You know what we're going to do. We're going to win. You know, Antonio Brown, who the heck wants to take on that problem child? You know, we've seen him get his way out of Oakland, Pittsburgh, everything else in horrific ways. He's still under investigation with the NFL. But Tom says, you can live with me again like you did in New England and come win with me. He does. And there's three of your touchdown passes on Sunday, two by Gronk and one by AB. And then Leonard Fournette washed up nothing in Jacksonville. And he says, oh, I want to come play with Tom Brady. He comes to Tampa and look how important he was on Sunday. So I think when you look at Carson Wentz, even if DeFilippo or Frank Wright can do anything with him, depending on where he goes, he does not have his locker room. He is not lovable and likable and winnable like Tom Brady is. I mean, Tom Brady's got that locker room. And while he can be tough on them, they know it's all about winning. And they want to win with him. Carson Wentz, A, isn't about winning. He hasn't shown that. He hasn't proven that. Of course, he wants to win. But B, he's polarizing in his locker room. His guys don't really want to step up for him. He's arrogant. He didn't rehab his knee at the training facility. He wanted to be away from people. And it's just interesting. I don't think he could attract the talent. And I think part of the quarterback's talent, and Russell Wilson and Deshaun Watson are great examples, as is Patrick Mahomes. People want to play for these guys. They want to, put their lives out for them. They will come there to play with them. I don't think Carson Wentz has that factor.
I'll tell you what, last year it was a meltdown season on the field and then off the field when Jalen Hurts didn't get to finish the season when he was pulled by Doug Peterson. Geez. It looked like there was a revolt in that locker room.
Yep.
That people really were frustrated with Doug Peterson because, to your point, Carson had lost the locker room. Jalen Hurts had won the locker room. The distinction there was very pronounced, and Jalen Hurts had assumed the title of being the guy. And then Peterson all of a sudden pulled him and said, well, we're looking at our third-string quarterback.
Was it Nate Peterman?
No, it was
Sudfield. Sudfield.
It was is the point.
Right.
A name that nobody knows, nobody will ever hear again.
And he proved it.
Well, it may be next year Jalen Hurts is the starter for the Eagles and he's the backup for the Eagles, but that's the most we'll ever hear from him. He's not in the consideration set. I just think when Doug Peterson pulled Jalen Hurts, that was the undoing of Doug Peterson. He lost the locker room there. And from then, it was a fait accompli. We lost Doug Peterson to the Eagles, and now Carson Wentz will be gone, I guess. It's costly for the Eagles to trade him. It's costly for the Eagles not to trade him.
Costly for the Eagles to give him that big, fat contract. I mean, that's exactly what the Rams did with Goff, and the Rams were lucky to get the heck out of that. The Eagles made a bad decision. I got to put that on Howie Roseman. That was a bad decision to pay Carson Wentz that amount of money at that time.
Well, in some sense, the problem for the Colts is, though, they are desperate. I mean, they don't have a starting quarterback for next year. Jacoby Brissett, maybe the heir apparent, is a free agent anyway. So they've got to find somebody, and I'm not sure Brissett could do the job. And I guess Frank Reich believes he can put Wentz back together. So that seems to be the logical matchup if you really believe that Wentz is salvageable.
Good luck to you.
All right, great NFL talk. Lots more. We'll have Deshaun Watson and other topics in a couple of segments. But
and
next,
your guy, Dak Prescott, and got
Dak
some headlines
Prescott
going.
Got headlines. We have coming up next, though, Keith Smith of Yahoo Sports. We're going to shift to NBA coverage. This is a guy who knows everything about the NBA, Keith Smith, Yahoo Sports. We're going to ask him, what will it take to fix the Brooklyn Nets? Is their defense a fatal flaw? Keith Smith next on the Sports Map Radio Network.
You're listening to Football Friday with the Boss
and the Gloss
on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Blue Emu and Rocket Mortgage.
From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gow
and Carla Dawson.
compromise your visibility with streaks or smearing on your windows. When it's time to replace your wiper blades, stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts. The professional parts people will help you navigate their wide selection to find just the right wiper blades for your vehicle. O'Reilly Auto Parts will even install your wiper blades free of charge. See better and drive safer with new wiper blades at O'Reilly Auto Parts. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. All right, we've had a lot of fun with the NFL in segment one. We're going to shift gears to the NBA here, and joining us shortly will likely be Keith Smith. He is the NBA expert for Yahoo Sports, and I'm eager to ask him about the Brooklyn Nets because so much has been expected of this team. Well, we've got now, Keith Smith is joining us here on the Progressive Insurance Guest Line.
That's the expert.
Keith, we have been looking forward to talking to you. Welcome onto the show. You're on with David and Carla.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, we'd love to talk to you about the Brooklyn Nets. High, high expectations, a defense that hasn't come together. What's your read on the team thus far?
I think you kind of hit the nail on the head there. It's really kind of that simple. I think their offense is going to be borderline unstoppable when all three of their main guys are there on the floor together in Durant, Harden, and Irving. And their defense is really bad. And they've made some steps to try to remedy that with a couple of their signings after they had open roster spots after the James Harden trade, but I don't know that that was enough. I think now you're going to have to see them really be active to try and make another trade to get defenders in there and then see what they can do in the buyout market to try to add some defensive help, because it's not going to be enough to try to win every game 125 to 120. Teams with that kind of profile have never been overly successful in the postseason.
No, Keith, you're so right, and they gave up so much of their support in this trade to get Harden. What Eastern Conference teams do you see that could potentially block Brooklyn's path to the finals? I mean, you've got Milwaukee, Boston, the 76ers. Do you see anybody that could get in the way of them going all the way to the finals?
I think the three teams you mentioned all have a pretty good chance. I think Philadelphia has proven so far they're playing the best of anybody in the conference. I know they lost last night, but they've played really well. They've got a really good defense. Their offense has been better. And Joel Embiid has been really great. He's been, you know, a top-tier MVP candidate. So I think what's really interesting, too, is they're a tough matchup because the Nets don't have anybody that they can even begin to throw on Embiid to even slow him down a little. Then for the Bucks, the Bucks are better than they were last year, which sounds a little weird because they're winning a little bit less. But I think they realize now winning, you know, as many regular season games as you can is not the end goal for this team. That they're really kind of, you know, playing it out in a way that makes a lot more sense now for them to be in the postseason. And then you mentioned Boston. I think if Boston can get their own defense going, which they're showing signs of, then they're going to be a tough matchup for the Nets as well, because they can score points. It's just going to come down to, can Brooklyn get enough stops? So any of those teams that you mentioned, I think, can really make life hard on Brooklyn.
We're talking to Keith Smith of Yahoo Sports. Okay, you mentioned the Celtics. Danny Ainge has that big player trade exemption. What do you see him doing with that?
Yeah, I think there's a growing sense that this is the year to use that in season versus waiting till the off season. It would be easier to use in the off season because all trades are easier to do in the off season. But I think Boston realizes Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown are good enough to lead to lead a title team. And I think as you look at it, it is the rest of the roster, is that good enough to lead there? And I think the answer to that is no. The challenge is, because the league is so condensed standings-wise right now, and the advent of the play-in, there just aren't sellers. We don't have any teams that are really, truly out of it. Even the Detroit Pistons, as poorly as they have played, they're only about 4.5 games out of being in the play-in mix, which is, you know, absolutely crazy with their record. The only team that's really kind of out of it is the Minnesota Timberwolves. Other teams will fall out. We're still about 6 weeks out from the trade deadline. Our brains are conditioned to think about it as a mid to late February thing. This year it's in late March. But that's where we'll see a couple more teams will fall out. Then that'll start to define the trade market. But I do think Boston will use that to reinforce the roster.
We're talking with Keith Smith, contributor for the NBA for Yahoo Sports. Keith, we're here in Texas. The Mavs have struggled pretty mightily this season. They're starting to get a little bit better. I know that Doncic is now starting to find himself again. Is the Porzingis factor, his availability with injury and all of that and just how he's been playing, is that a major factor to why the Mavericks have struggled so much this season so far?
I don't think it's as much Porzingis as it is their defense has been really bad. I think he's had some ups and downs, but I think we kind of knew that was going to be the case coming back from injury. It was going to take him a little while to find his rhythm, but I think he's getting there. But their defense, up until about, let's call it a week ago, had really been awful. They just could not get stops at all. They couldn't do anything. Now I think what you're seeing in the last week or so is Porzingis is comfortable. All the guys who missed a lot of time, which were several key rotation players and even some starters for them due to COVID, are now back in the lineup. I think they're finding a rhythm. Defense is often about communication and connectedness as much as it is individual defensive talent. So I think what you're starting to see now is Dallas is starting to, they're getting enough stops on that end. The offense is finding its rhythm. And that's why they've won three in a row and they're starting to push their way up the standings. I expect them now for the rest of the way to be more the team we expected them to be this year, which is, you know, kind of they'll probably maybe have to go through the play-in process because they've kind of dug themselves a little bit of a hole, but they may even be able to dig out of that and get to that sixth seed in a short playoff spot.
Keith, I'd love to ask you about the rookies. Is there a rookie that has surprised you most thus far?
I think the one who surprised me the most is Peyton Pritchard of the Boston Celtics.
Yeah.
Just being drafted so late in the first round, it's kind of a smaller point guard, more of a, looked like he was going to be a traditional type point guard, but he has played really, really well. And then at the top of the draft, I think everybody is performing better than I think what a lot of people expected. We're seeing a lot of these guys do quite well. And for as much as this was considered to be a bad draft class, I think what now we're seeing is there may not be true superstars. There may not be guys who make more than, you know, one or two all-star teams in this class. But I think we've got 7, 8, 9, 10, maybe even 15 to 20 guys who have an 8 to 10 year NBA career as a rotation player. And that's pretty good in the end.
So, Keith, Utah Jazz, they're the best record in the NBA right now. Is this sustainable, and do you see them getting out of the West?
To the first part, yes. To the second part, we'll see. I still have some doubts against the two LA teams. Those teams, I still think, even though the Jazz are ahead of them in the regular season, they're the teams to beat in the conference. But the sustainable part, absolutely. I think what you're seeing with the Jazz is they are now kind of running on all cylinders. It's been a team that has kind of missed somebody the last couple of years. Bogdanovich was out after the restart, missed the entire bubble for them. He's a huge part of their team. Mike Conley took a while to find his footing in Utah after playing the entirety of his long career in Memphis before that. And now this team has really found their way. I said this week a couple different times, they know who they are more than any team in the NBA right now. Every single player knows what his role is. They know what's asked of him. Quinn Snyder plays the most consistent rotation in the league when everybody's available. This team is really, really good. And a lot of people keep pointing to, well, they're shooting it so good, that'll come down. But if you look at the individual players, nobody's shooting 10 percentage points better than their previous career best or anything like that. Everybody's still right in range. So I think this team is here to stay.
Keith, we've got about a minute remaining. Do you think the league is making a mistake holding an All-Star game?
I do. I think it's absolutely necessary to name All-Stars. There's historical reasons for that. There's also contract incentive reasons that are important to players. To have a game makes absolutely no sense to me. I understand that the television partners make a lot of money off the All-Star game, and potentially maybe some of that comes back into the league. If that is the case, then you know, I can begrudgingly understand it, but I don't think it's the right move. I think when we were still in a position up to, you know, a week or so ago that games were being postponed due to guys being out with COVID, it's just a mistake. And bringing all these players to Atlanta, where, you know, we saw what happened with the Hawks when they played LeBron James. They have fans right almost courtside, which absolutely is, you know, ludicrous to me. We got to, you know, figure this out. There's a better look to not do this.
Keith, really appreciate your coming on. We got to get you back. Really, you're a font of information on all things NBA. Appreciate it. You can see Keith at Yahoo Sports. Go read him there.
Thank you.
You've been listening to The Boss and the Gloss. We'll come back and talk a little NFL. We'll see if there's any way that Deshaun Watson can be with the Texans next year. That up next on the Sports Map Radio Network.
It's a Football Friday with the Boss.
And the Gloss.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Blue Emu and Rocket Mortgage.
From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gow.
And Carla Dawson.
Welcome back, and what an NFL offseason it looks like it will be. In fact,
in the 5 days that it's been an offseason.
In the 5 days. But amazingly, you know, with the NBA, we've always talked about how there are three seasons. There's the playoff season, which is always really, really exciting. That's the best. There's the off season, which is really intriguing. And then there's the regular season. Sort of the regular season is the third most interesting thing. The NFL off season this year might just look like the NBA off season with all the pieces that might be moved. Headlined by, well, let's just, I mean, some of these headlines, I don't believe them all, but there was a rumor, there was a headline that maybe it'll be Russell Wilson and Dak Prescott trade. Deshaun's going to get traded. Aaron Rodgers is going to get moved. Jimmy G is going to the Patriots. You tally them all up, and this is a rumor-filled offseason to come. The biggest headline, of course, is Deshaun Watson, and that doesn't feel like a rumor. That feels like a deal that's going to happen, that Deshaun Watson will be playing for another team next year. It's egregious that it has come to this. The Texans forever and ever were searching for their franchise quarterback. They finally got him, and now they've done
after
just
20
about...
20 years.
Yes.
Like, I mean,
Matt Schaub was the best thing they ever had, right, at quarterback, and he was above journeyman level, perhaps. But look, Deshaun is the guy they always wanted, the guy that every team wanted, and now they've done just about everything to upset him, and it would appear it's irreconcilable.
Well, and we sit here in Houston, and unfortunately we could take the whole 2 hours talking about the complete dysfunction in this organization. But we will not do that to everybody that's listening. But I think highlighting what has gone on is key, because this morning, listening to Matt Hasselbeck saying, hey, you know what? Listen, QBs, you don't always get to play for the head coach you don't want. Well, David Culley is like the eighth thing that has gone wrong. Deshaun Watson, let me just summarize this. It is not about, I don't want to play for David Culley. That's not it. This is one piece of being lied to, being, you know, not being able to trust the organization. You know, the Texans have fallen apart under the leadership of Cal McNair. Bob McNair, his dad, who is now deceased, someone who brought the franchise to Houston, basically did a great job and had President Jamie Roots, who has now left as well. But the bottom line is that Cal McNair chose Jack Easterby over Deshaun Watson in a variety of ways.
Cal McNair, of course, the owner of the Texans, and then he hired in this guy, Jack Easterby, with a background of player development, character concerns, a chaplain, and has really ascended to run a lot of the operations of the Texans.
Yeah, Cal's promoted Easterby to a position. He's VP of something or other. Not only that he doesn't deserve, but one that is way over his head. And Easterby's power is buffered by a weak owner in Cal. And that's the whole problem. And, you know, players don't trust Easterby. Deshaun Watson doesn't trust Easterby. Nobody trusts him. And how everything has gone down in the organization, if you look at the players that are doing well other places, Russell Wilson, you know, complaining about his O-line, except for Dwayne Brown. He's got a great left tackle. Where did that left tackle come from? The Texans. Why? Because the Texans wronged him.
Mm.
DeAndre Hopkins, why is Arizona even above 500? And even where did the Hail Mary come from? DeAndre Hopkins, why is DeAndre Hopkins with Arizona? Because the Texans boofed that one and Easterby wanted him out. It is a variety of things. And Deshaun Watson, just to repeat what we've already said, but apparently the media doesn't really get it. They want to oversimplify that Deshaun's being a diva and needs to learn how to play for a head coach. No. Cal McNair asked Deshaun Watson to dinner and said, what do you want? He said, all I want in your hiring of a GM and a coach, since this has blown up terribly in this past 4-12 season, and I've carried my weight by leading the league in passing and putting up unbelievable stats when you've given me nothing. All I want is some input. I know you're going to, I don't do the hiring. I would love some input in the GM and the coach. And I love Eric Bieniemy as a candidate. and ultimately you're going to do what you need to do, but input would be great. Cal McNair says, no problem. You got it. Not only did he learn of the DeAndre Hopkins trade this past season over social media, but
the new general manager, Nick Caserio, he learned about, and now David Culley is head coach. And David Culley is a guy who, of all the quarterback or all the coaches that were available this offseason, David Culley was not on anyone's list. I mean, he had not been interviewed for a head coaching position. He's not a guy anybody knew.
Darned.
I mean, we could survey all of our listeners and say how many of you had actually heard of David Culley. And maybe if you live in Baltimore, you did because he was with the Ravens. But this is not a household name. They've really stretched to hire David Culley. It is, at this point,
David Culley may have been one of the only people who would be willing to take a job in this dysfunctional organization.
Well, of course, he said that he came to the Texans in part because he was excited to have Deshaun Watson. And, of course, Watson wants out. Communications have broken down.
He was lied to, and Cal and others didn't live up to their word. That's the bottom line with Watson, who's a man of character.
So where we stand now, Watson seemingly wants out. Caserio has said, we will not trade him. Mm-hmm. It is a standoff. Now, if the Texans are going to trade him, it would be smart to trade him before the draft so they can get all the draft capital in this draft to position for next year.
The key word you said was smart. That's not what's happening on Kirby Drive.
Yeah, so you're they don't. Correct. Let's say they don't do it. Let's say they dig in. Then we sit in the summer, and it's time for people to report to training camps and get the season ready. And then the question will be, does Deshaun show up? Does he force their hand? I mean, this is not going to end well for somebody. It's just an ugly situation. And Deshaun, I mean, he is beloved in this town, but it will be a very tough moment for everybody if, in fact, the Texans dig in, do not trade him, and Deshaun says, I won't show up.
Well, you look at the context of why he wants to take his talents elsewhere. And I just have to believe that he wins in the court of public opinion. And ultimately, he's going to win, you know, this situation. But it could get ugly because I think Caserio is digging in his heels and he's being tough about it, which, you know, this is what I would say to Nick. I'm like, hey, Nick, welcome to Houston. You know, it's not your fault that it came in with no communication. You didn't do that. This is Easterby and Cal. This is all of their doing. Look, let's be very clear about that. So I think Nick Caserio seems like a great guy. But you got to be the bigger man, Nick, and look at the situation. You've got a quarterback who will not return calls to the owner. He will not return calls to you, the general manager, and the new head coach. He doesn't want any communication with you people because he's been lied to. He's been wronged time after time after time, and he's done. He's a man of principle. And so you, if you want to make anything, like if you go into the draft as is right now, you have 8 picks, the first starting in the third round. You're insignificant. No one cares. No one thinks about you, and good luck to you. I mean, you're not going to get – it's going to be unlikely to get a Dak Prescott situation in the fourth round or Tom Brady at the 199th pick, whatever. But if you make a blockbuster trade, which is the only way that Deshaun is going anywhere, your draft capital is going to be astounding. And now you're intriguing. Now you're a player in the system. And now something good can happen to your team. So you decide on that, Nick. If you want to be stubborn and stick your feet in the ground, good. You can be a non-afterthought just like you are now. The only headlines you all are making are negative because your organization is an absolute mess. Do the right thing. Get your draft picks. You've this organization that you agreed to work for has screwed it up, and you can thank your pastor for it.
Well, interestingly, Jamie Roots, who was in our studio here, what, about 6-8 weeks ago, longstanding president of the Texans, actually from inception to today, for 20 years, Jamie Roots ran the business side of the operation, and he has now departed from view here as well. He has walked out the door.
Resigned abruptly.
And his job was to sell tickets. And the Texans have sold out every game since inception. So his record was 20 seasons and 0. He always won, and the Texans always sold. They were doing really, really well on that front. The two marquee players that he marketed the most were Deshaun Watson and J.J. Watt.
And rightfully so.
And it would appear that both will not be part of the organization next year. J.J. Watt perhaps should be traded because his window of performance.
And his cap hit.
Yeah, I mean, he's older, and the Texans aren't going to be able to perform at a Super Bowl level in the window of his career.
Well, and he's the only Super Bowl level player on that defense right now, you know, given last season.
There's a real logic for the benefit of JJ and maybe even for the Texans that they part ways at this time. And I think fandom will accept that. But I don't blame Jamie Roots for leaving right now because his best tools of marketing, those players, are done.
I'm going to interrupt you guys just for a second because Ian Rappaport's reporting the Texans are releasing J.J. Watt.
Releasing J.J. Watt. Intriguing because I would have thought they could have gotten some draft capital back.
Well, this, Ron, you know what? I appreciate that because the word releasing is key. Trade him. He has value. He is a three-time defensive player of the year. Yes, he's on the sunset of his career. He led the Texans with 5 sacks last year, was the only reason they didn't get shut out of every single solitary game. What in the world? What are you thinking, Ron?
Well, they have a history. They have a history of
the only thing I'm thinking now, what I want J.J. Watt to go to Pittsburgh.
To play with his brother.
Yeah. It would be cool to see that.
Let's and you know what? This should help the public and the media and all of this. And when you look at the fact that Jamie Roots, one of the best presidents in the entire NFL, leaves abruptly because he was blacked out of every process that he was supposed to be in, the people who are vocal and upset, J.J. Watt, Deshaun Watson, and Andre Johnson, the Ring of Honor, greatest player, you know, before these two in the Texans organization, listen up, people. These are great people who are not happy with this organization.
J.J. Watt.
What I'm saying. They're not going to do the smart thing. I mean, they don't know how.
They gave up DeAndre Hopkins for nothing. As you know, Clowney could have gotten more when they let Clowney go. Look, there's a history here of bad trades, and this isn't a trade. This is a lack of a trade. Why they wouldn't have shopped them around? I mean, I had heard whispers that perhaps they could get at least a third and maybe a second for J.J. at this point in his career and with his salary impact. And of course, the Texans don't have a first-round pick or a second-round pick. What's the plan? How do you put a competitive team out on the field next year?
The plan is I'm going to listen to whatever Jack Easterby tells me to do. I've been Easterbied. Yay! Look how it's working for the Texans. Oh, my God. You can tell I'm not happy.
I see smoke coming out of her ears. The loss here in Houston, Texas, has watched her Texans just unravel. I mean, this is about a 24-month endeavor where they have let go of good players or traded too much draft capital for someone like a Tunsil. They have just made all the wrong moves.
It's been a slow burn, and now they've just jumped off the cliff. Now they just said, oh my gosh, it's too much for me to handle.
A team without Watson and Watt next year, dark, dark team.
There it is on the NFL Network, Ian Rappaport, just like you said, Ron. You heard it here first. Wow, by Ron Culver, releasing J.J. Watt. I'm sure J.J. is about to throw a party. I mean, that's a gift for him. But, you know, this just shows you the ineptitude of the Texans. Wow, I just don't have – well, I do have words. What am I saying? I have lots of words, but I'm going to stop.
Hey, when we come back, we're going to take a quick look at the Dak Prescott situation with the Cowboys. He was left off the highlight realm, the film, and it's sort of inexplicable.
Oh, we might need a long segment for that.
Well, we'll talk about it when we come back. You're listening to the Boston Gloss on the Sports Map Radio Network.
You're listening to Football Friday with the Boss
and the Gloss
on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Blue Emu and Rocket Mortgage.
From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gow
and Carla Dawson.
I wanted to do this on video as opposed to putting out a statement or doing a press conference or anything like that, because I want you guys to hear it directly from me. I want to speak directly to you and the city of Houston so you can hear the words straight from my mouth. I have sat down with the McNair family and I have asked them for my release, and we have mutually agreed to part ways at this time.
An amazing turn of events for the Houston Texans. J.J. Watt will no longer wear the uniform.
After 10 plus amazing seasons with the team.
I mean, we had all envisioned a trade was possible, but to just be released outright, nothing in return for the Texans. This is a bad day for the Texans, both from a marketing standpoint and from a player and team development.
Well, and it just, you know, if I'm J.J., I don't want to give. I don't want to help that organization. I'm like, you know what? I want released. I want out of here because it's getting worse by the day. And you remember, Bill O'Brien, the firing, the far overdue firing didn't happen until he had a massive altercation before the Pittsburgh game on the practice field. J.J. Watt screaming at Bill O'Brien, and finally the Texans released him. So you know what? When J.J. talks, things happen.
Yeah, Watt might have been instrumental in Bill O'Brien's departure. And he has been the face of the franchise for so many years.
And the NFL. Frankly.
Remember, he was drafted, I guess, 11 overall in the first round, and everyone was questioning whether that was a good decision or not. Oh, my gosh, it's been a great decision.
Three-time defensive player of the year.
Three-time defensive player. In 2017, Sports Illustrated named him Sports Person of the Year. An extraordinary talent on the field.
The Walter Payton Award for all that he did for Hurricane Harvey. I mean, just...
In this town, when Hurricane Harvey hit and about 50% of the city was underwater, he was the guy who went out and raised a ton of money to help those who had been set out of their homes. And he's just been a great fixture in this community. I guess what the Texans are going to say is, well, we did what was best for J.J. We love J.J., and we wanted to let J.J. free so that he could go pick the best team and situation for him.
And then you can go, wow, that's great that you got nothing in return for him, because that's exactly what you've done with everything you've done with Duane Brown, with DeAndre Hopkins. You know, let's see what you're going to do with Watson. I don't blame J.J. I would run the heck out of this team. It's really sad. And do you know, when we talked about last segment, Jamie Roots, the president, stepping down abruptly on Wednesday, the Texans asked him to wait for a while because they didn't want the team to look dysfunctional. Whoop! Too late.
Amazing. This hour of the Boston Gloss on Sports Map Radio has been presented by Rocket Mortgage. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Boston Gloss of the Sports Map Radio Network.